common sense commentary on politics, culture, and current events. If it's on your mind, it's In the News. And now, In the News, with your host, Mike Dakak.
So there's still plenty of controversy here surrounding this hydroxychloroquine question. This is the drug that has shown plenty of promise in treating coronavirus. The NIH said the other day, the National Institute of Health, that they can neither recommend for or against the use of hydroxychloroquine. But then in that same announcement, they go on to cite as evidence about half a dozen or so studies that all show that hydroxychloroquine benefits coronavirus patients. They also said that they recommend against using the combination, the popular combination of hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin, because they say that combination may have dangerous side effects, although it's been used by many doctors all over the world. They say it's been known to cause heart incidents in some patients. Well, the question is not whether it has dangerous side effects for some patients, because every medicine put out by Big Pharma over the last 50 or 60 years has dangerous side effects for some patients. I mean, look at those commercials that you see put out by Big Pharma all the time. They spend 5 seconds talking about the benefit of any particular medicine and then 45 seconds talking about the side effects of that particular medicine. Side effects include heart attack and AIDS, cancer, death, spontaneous combustion. And people are laughing and having picnics and smiling, doing cannonballs into backyard pools and the whole thing. So the question is not about side effects. And hydroxychloroquine, used with azithromycin and zinc, that combination, that cocktail, if you want to call it that, has been shown to help the vast majority of coronavirus patients. And that's not me talking, and that's not other independent news sources talking. That's the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons talking. Last week, that group, the AAPS, sent a letter to Governor Ducey of Arizona, practically begging him, asking him to make the drug more available and easier to get, hydroxychloroquine. The FDA has said that hydroxychloroquine should not be administered unless the patient is hospitalized. And so not only do they have to be hospitalized, not only do they have to be COVID-19 positive, but they have to be COVID-19 positive, hospitalized, and taking part in a clinical study. They want to control the results. They want to control the information around this thing. Even though studies have shown that hydroxychloroquine can be used prophylactically, in other words, it can prevent people who don't have COVID from getting COVID in the first place. It's not just to treat the virus after it's been contracted. Ducey, out in Arizona, has made it so that the drug can't be used prophylactically. Other governors have made it so that every prescription written for the drug, for hydroxychloroquine, has to come stapled along with it a positive COVID-19 test, meaning it's virtually impossible for it to be used prophylactically. Now, the AAPS, they cite, what they did is they studied all of the studies. They gathered all of the clinical data available on every patient that was treated with hydroxychloroquine that's been documented all over the world. We're talking about China, France, South Korea, Algeria, here, the United States, all these different countries. And they studied those findings. And they found that the treatment helped 91% of the patients it was administered to. Now, understanding, as we just said, that no drug or treatment is 100% effective in 100% of patients. 91% is pretty darn impressive, isn't it? Their research found that out of more than 2,000 patients in these countries that I just listed here, only 63 of them died. And all but 11 of those 63 were severely ill before taking the drug. But unfortunately, once you're in critical condition with this virus, it's very difficult to recover. At that point, the science and doctors are telling us there's very little that can be done at that point to bring about recovery. I've spoken to you before, getting back to the drug, about how in mid-January, before the brunt of this virus really hit here stateside, hydroxychloroquine was taken off the market in France, completely taken off. They made it so that you had to have a prescription to get it, which was kind of odd, because up until that point, it had been available over the counter in France for more than 50 years. And recall that it was only after Trump came out and mentioned hydroxychloroquine, and it, by the way, if you go back and review those comments, you see that he didn't tout it as a cure-all or as a wonder drug. He just said it's showing signs of promise. It's promising, which is the only thing anybody that's ever advocated for this thing has said. No one said don't talk to your doctor first before taking it. No one said it's safe to take on your own without instructions and without being monitored. But see, it's become clear that they don't want to just squash hydroxychloroquine. They want to squash the hope surrounding it. What they want is for people to not have hope. in this drug or any other drug, accept the drugs and treatments they want to push on us. They say they're worried about a run on the medicine. The medicine is on the market, and it's used to treat illnesses such as lupus and rheumatoid arthritis. And the people who use it for those illnesses, they need it. And so, you know, having a run on the medicine by people who don't necessarily need it and hoarding it, that's a serious concern. But the AAPS is telling us that there are ample doses available for people, and there is manufacturing that is ramping up to meet the extra demand. So why is it still being obstructed? It was only after Trump came out and mentioned it, for example, that all the news networks magically, miraculously, started contemplating whether they were going to continue carrying his press conferences. Many of them did stop, but they didn't stop cold turkey. See, they didn't make it terribly obvious. What they did was they started covering it when the press conference first started. They would dip into it for the first few minutes there, and then they would hit you with the old, well, we're gonna turn away from the president now, but we're going to continue to monitor the press conference and give you any important developments that may arise. They're not monitoring for important developments. They're monitoring for any information that goes against their agenda. It's kind of like Hollywood awards shows, how they're on a 10 or 15 second tape delay. So just in case one of these drugged out Hollywood pedophile types curses or uses foul language, they have a chance to censor it before it gets out to the rest of the country. Well, it's the same kind of principle that they're applying here. They want the chance to screen the president's message to keep the wrong thing from getting out. They don't want you to know that there are medicines out there that can help. If they're so worried about demand skyrocketing and supply plummeting, why don't they ramp up supply? I mean, they're assured customers, are they not? We're literally, in marketing terms here, a captive audience. We're all sitting at home waiting to take our medicine, as I've said before. If France was able to connect the dots on this thing working, and therefore there might be a huge run on this drug, why didn't they get to work immediately on the supply? Even if they wanted to throttle the supply temporarily by making it prescription only, that was in the middle of January. It's now the middle of May. It's 4 months later. I mean, they're talking about a vaccine timeline that is moving at a lightning fast clip here. Operation Warp Speed, it's being called in the Trump administration. And that says vaccines will be available by the end of the year. So an 18 to 24 month timeline has been condensed down to 6 months. Lord, it's a miracle. But ramping up production on a drug that has been shown to be effective, that's already on the market. You don't have to do clinical trials here. It's already been tried and approved, and we have years, decades, as a matter of fact, of data on it. Production of that kind of a drug, we can't make heads or tails of here after 4 months? And even if the supply and the demand is the problem, even if there's a supply and demand gap, why are they continuing the disinformation campaign? Why do they shoot down any promise associated with the medicine? They're contradicting not just the president on this thing, but the doctors. They're contradicting the science. What does that tell you? It's not really a fear of a supply and demand gap at all, is it? It's about an agenda. You know, anyone who thinks that a vaccine for this thing, for COVID-19, hasn't been ready for months, and they're just going through the motions here for our benefit, trying to roll it out, going through all the clinical trials and going through the approval process and a new development and a new headline that pops up every week to 10 days. If you believe there hasn't been a vaccine ready for months, I've got a bridge to sell you. They tell you it's 18 to 24 months so that when they roll this thing out in September or October, right at the start of flu season, you're like, oh my God, thank God. Yes, I'm first in line to get this thing. Give it to me first. There's an interesting dance that's going to take place here. And it's going to be about information regarding medicine and treatment and how it's all going to work, because there's an agenda behind everything they're pushing. And just as importantly, everything they're not pushing, everything they're downplaying. Right? Nobody is making anything up here, for the most part, that is. Of course, there are charlatans and bad actors and opportunists. And as the weeks and months go on here, it's going to be something to pay attention to, because they're all going to start to come out of the woodwork as it becomes more and more apparent that there's money to be made here, and serious money to be made. So you're going to have some bad actors try and push some questionable treatments and drugs. But most independent news sources that are acting in good faith are spreading information that is not coming from them. It's coming from the medical community. It's coming from doctors and nurses who are blowing the whistle on these things, risking their jobs in many instances to do so. That information is just not being promoted by mainstream news outlets because, again, they have their own plan and their own agenda. they're getting their talking orders from their globalist bosses. And so again, the interesting dance that is coming here is going to be between, you know, there's going to be an information gap or a credibility gap between the treatments and medicines they want us to take and the treatments and medicines that we, actually, it's not even about us wanting to take anything. It's going to be between the treatments and medicines that they want us to take and what's actually best for us. And how big that credibility gap is actually best for us, all things considered, taking a lot of things into account, not just one or two factors. But how big that credibility gap is going to determine how fierce this battle is going to be and how much danger we're going to be in. Again, it's the information they don't want to get out that we have to amplify. There's going to be a lot of talk next about remdesivir. Remdesivir is that drug that was developed by Gilead Sciences several years ago to treat Ebola. Remember the Ebola outbreak of 2015? Well, it was shown to not be very effective in fighting Ebola. And Ebola, when you come to think of it, the Ebola crisis of a couple of years ago may have been the kind of the opening salvo in this latest round of bio weapons and bioterror attacks that the globalists and the one world government crowd are waging against us here. Remember the panic surrounding that? You always do the opposite of what they want you to do. Ebola was supposed to end the world as we knew it. And that's how you knew, and it turned out to be not all that serious and not all that dangerous. This, when it first came out, and they still wanted it to spread, this was nothing. There was no evidence of human-to-human transmission. Don't overreact. China is acting responsibly. And by the way, folks, speaking of China, does anyone seriously still believe that the number of deaths in China throughout this entire ordeal is still 4,000? I mean, this is farcical. But that's how you knew there was a storm coming. But looking back on it, dangerous disease from overseas with Ebola, mandatory quarantines, controversy over the outbreak and the spread and which medicines to take, they were studying as far back as that outbreak what they were going to do. This is just a war game for the big one that's coming. And that's why we have to organize now as well as we can. Well, the FDA, back to remdesivir, came out last week and said, hey, look, everybody, remdesivir is working. Isn't this fantastic? Patients using it recovered 31% faster than patients who were not using it. Then Fauci came out later on that day and said, well, actually, the data isn't that great. And when you look at the underlying evidence, it's not that fantastic. And a lot of it is statistically insignificant. Before Fauci came out and after the FDA and Gilead Sciences made their statements, a paper was published in the scientific journal The Lancet that showed that Chinese scientists found in their first randomized official study of remdesivir that it didn't help patients at all. It did not speed recovery or reduce deaths significantly from COVID-19. China knocked the drug off in January, I mentioned that to you before, after it showed signs of promise, but it looks like, at least as things stand now with this new data that's come in, it's turning out to be a bust. It's turned out to be a bust. So they were going to push this thing on us, but then Chinese scientists came out with research that debunked it, and so Fauci had to come out and kind of throw cold water on it and save a little bit of face. So the things that don't work, they're going to push, and the things that do work, they want to scare you away from. This is why nobody trusts what's being said around this thing, what we're being told. There's information floating around that talks about how the coronavirus presents with all the same symptoms, or many of them, as high altitude sickness, shortness of breath, oxygen deprivation, that kind of thing. But when it comes to some forms of high altitude sickness, there's a few different forms. But some forms, a patient is having difficulty breathing, not because the lungs aren't working per se, but it's because there's fluid in the lungs. Some forms of high altitude sickness cause fluid to build up in the lungs, and the patient has difficulty breathing. Well, we know that in some cases, in some patients of COVID-19, of the coronavirus, fluid collects in the lungs, making it very difficult for those patients to breathe properly. That's why ventilators don't work. It's not, what's that number, 80% of people who get, patients who get put on ventilators wind up succumbing to the disease, they wind up passing away, dying. It's not because the lungs aren't working and people can't breathe, it's because there's fluid there blocking oxygen from getting about. I mean, obviously the lungs aren't working properly if a person is not breathing, but the source problem is the fluid. If you really want to help those people, the science says, you don't pump oxygen into them, you need to drain the fluid from the lungs. That's what some of this information says. Well, there are some medicines developed for high altitude sickness that causes fluid to drain from the lungs. But you want to be careful, Because there's also evidence, the science says, that those medicines, that those high altitude sickness medicines, if given to a COVID-19 patient, can have adverse effects on the lungs as well as on the kidneys. They should only be taken if directed by a doctor, and after taken, a patient should be monitored closely. There's also another angle that the doctors are working on, and that's the heart attack angle. You know, back in the early days of the outbreak, you would see just heartbreaking videos of people walking down the street in China, and they would all of a sudden they would seize up and just kind of tip over, and they would fall face first onto the sidewalk. Some people were at their desks at work, and they would just tip over and collapse. But the people on the street, they'd hit their heads on the sidewalk, and they would just be laying there bleeding out. And stunned onlookers would just be surrounding the person on the ground, not knowing what to do. They'd be scared and stunned, and invariably somebody would be recording all this on a cell phone. And eventually first responders would come and take the patient away. Well, we know now that coronavirus causes clots in the blood to form, and that can lead to heart attacks and embolisms and strokes. There are many countries, as well as hospitals here in the States, that are experimenting with treatment using blood thinners. Perhaps that was the reason people were just collapsing in the street. Now, that's one of the worries about using hydroxychloroquine. Actually, it's one of the legitimate worries, as it's been known to cause arrhythmias. So that's one of the things you have to be careful of if you have an underlying condition such as heart disease. That's something you and your doctor have to monitor if you were going to take that drug. But see, why can't Dr. Fauci or Dr. Birx stand up in front of microphones every day and say what I just said, say things like this? There's a group that's testing 47 different drugs that are already on the market. Some of them are showing signs of promise in fighting COVID-19. You ever hear anything about that? Even though it's an ongoing thing and no breakthroughs have been made yet, do you hear anything about it? Hearing me say what I just said, does that cause you to run out and start gulping down blood thinner pills by the dozen? Or high altitude sickness pills by the bottle? Of course not. You're a rational thinking human being. You know to talk to your doctor first. This is why we've got to make sure to get the word out. Remember, folks, a conspiracy theory is no longer a conspiracy theory. A conspiracy theory now is defined as anything they don't want you to know. It's any dots they don't want you to connect. You know, we're going to start to, speaking of dots no one wants you to connect, we're going to start to hear a lot about contact tracing now. This is going to be the next phase of this epidemic or pandemic or whatever you want to call it. States are ramping up and rolling out their contact tracing capabilities. And what that is it's the state's ability to tell who you've come in contact with in recent days and weeks. But of course, they don't just say it's any random person. They say it's an infected person. And they say, don't worry, this is voluntary. You don't have to take part in it if you don't want to. And we're not going to use GPS. We're just going to use Bluetooth technology. And the data is going to remain completely anonymous. Well, how anonymous can it possibly remain? And for how long? How will they know whether a person is infected or not so they can warn you about them? Well, that means that a mobile device has to be connected in some of a phone number or a serial number of a mobile device, which are both interchangeable because they're both identifying markers of a mobile device. They have to be connected to a medical record at the very least, a positive COVID-19 record. And so, okay, we're all fine with that, but what other information are they going to link to after that? And what happens, by the way, when a person is known to be infected? Well, presumably that person will have been told to quarantine by their medical staff, right? Well, what happens if they don't? Is whoever is monitoring that data, when they see an infected person represented by a red dot or something that's moving around on a computer screen overlaid over a map of a town or a city or a state, are they just going to sit back and say, oh, hey, look, it's an infected person out and about moving around? Or are they going to alert authorities? Even if initially that's not part of the deal, is it eventually going to be part of the deal? I mean, we would want them to alert authorities, would we not? I mean, they're infected. I wouldn't want someone, if I own a restaurant, coming into my restaurant if they're infected and infecting other customers or infecting the staff. I'm going to have a hard enough time getting customers into my place. I don't need somebody coming in and having customers who are already there have their cell phones ringing off the hook with warnings about they're now in close proximity to an infected person. Of course, I'm going to want the authorities to be alerted. How about if I own a barbershop? Or how about if I'm just sitting next to a person on a train? I'd want to be alerted. So they're going to alert the authorities. Do the authorities then come and remove you by force from where you are, take you into custody? What happens when this army of contact tracers finds that you were within close contact of someone who was positive, does your color code, if that's how they're going to classify people, go from green to, say, yellow like it does in China? The University of Southern California was just announced this week. Emory University and the University of Texas, they've teamed up. They've joined forces to create a social credit score surveillance system, I kid you not, that will score people based on their exposure to the virus, just like they have in China. The app promises to track you in real time and determine, and I'm quoting here, the need to quarantine and decontaminate. They've received federal funding for the project. They hope to roll it out by August, just in time for the start of the fall semester, because of course they do. By that time, all the 5G towers will have been installed on school campuses all over the country, and they'll be ready to handle the transfer of all that data. Do you think they would spend billions of dollars, because that's what this is going to cost, do you think they would spend billions of dollars hiring employees, setting up tracking systems, setting up massive nationwide databases, upgrading network capabilities to gather information they're never going to use? What good is actionable intelligence if you never intend to take action on it? You know, we talk a lot about the victims of this virus, but the death rate, it's now confirmed. And I spent a long time downplaying the debate going on about the death rate. And I said, listen, it's a distraction. At this point, it's a distraction. We need to concentrate on why they're trying so hard to get this thing to spread. Well, we can talk for a moment here about the death rate because the data is in. We have actual data now from frontline workers, from actual hospitals about the cases that are coming in. And the death rate is on par with the flu. It seems to be a little bit worse, but it's in the same ballpark, more or less. 70,000 people have died in the U.S. so far from the coronavirus. 60,000 people, that's on the high end of estimates, die every year from the flu. Now, COVID-19 spreads easier than the flu, and it's a little bit worse in terms of death rate. It's a little bit more virulent, a little bit more dangerous as far as what we're seeing now. But healthy people aren't dying from the coronavirus. And by the way, when I say healthy people aren't dying, I don't say that arrogantly, and I don't say it with a sense of invincibility. I say it humbly, and I say it with the full understanding that I myself might be touched by this virus one day or someone close to home to me. I have a distant aunt who tested positive a couple weeks ago. She has since recovered. But I say it with the full understanding that I might hit close to home one day. I myself might be affected by it or someone that I care about. But healthy people aren't dying in large numbers from this virus. You know who the real victims of this virus are? Small business owners and small business employees. This isn't a coronavirus. It's an independent economy virus. This thing is killing the independent economy. It's killing mom and pop shops. All the big companies, all the major, the Fortune 500s, they're going to survive. They're going to take hits. They're not going to emerge unscathed, but they're going to emerge. They're going to make it through. This is completely killing risk-taking. And by extension, therefore, it's killing independence, which, as we all know, is the lifeblood of the American economy. It's ushering in an era of dependency on government, on bigger corporations that are going to swallow smaller corporations like big fish swallow small fish in the sea. And perhaps most importantly, it's going to bring in dependency on big tech. This is an assault, and I don't think it's an exaggeration, but this is an assault on humanity itself, on our way of life. They're making it seem like it's a medical emergency, but the data just simply isn't there to back that up. The independent economy emergency, though, all the data we have seems to back that up. The G20 was on a call last week to reassert their commitment to coming up with a vaccine. The U.S. was not on that call. We boycotted that call, thankfully. I mean, it was a small but symbolic gesture, but appropriate nonetheless, if you ask me. But you had all these heads of state on the call, and you had Bill Gates. What the heck is Bill Gates doing on that call? Did he just suddenly become the prime minister of a G20 nation without the rest of us noticing? Remember last week, or perhaps it was the week before now, when I told you not to worry about the WHO and the fact that we cut their funding, that the globalists would come together and make sure they had all the money they need? Well, last week it was announced that the EU bank is going to make up for the funding that we're holding back. Who's mobilizing to make sure small business owners are going to be made whole again? Sure, they're getting handouts. They're getting a little bit here and a little bit there, but that's not what they need. They don't need a little bit here and a little bit there. They don't need a rent payment or two to be covered. It helps, but their needs go much, much further than that. They need a sense of normalcy to come back. And more importantly, their customers need a sense of normalcy to come back in order for them to come back. Normalcy here being defined as confidence, the confidence people had in leaving their homes, the confidence they had to go to the mall and spend their money, These millions of people worldwide that have been put out of work, that have had their lives stolen from them, what are they going to do with them? Well, all those people are now being recruited to become a kind of digital Gestapo. Like the technical brown shirts are coming. This is a fundamental transformation of the economy. It's the fourth industrial revolution that globalists have been talking about for years. And that's why we have to open back up again. I saw a story about a town in Oklahoma where the citizens there were beginning to threaten store owners because some store owners were requiring that they wear masks before coming in. Put the mask on, but go about your business. They're playing the long game with us, folks, so we have to play the long game with them. And when you talk to one of these people, again, I say this humbly, keep in mind you're talking to a victim. You're talking to someone who has been brainwashed. I was yelled at not too long ago, a couple of weeks ago now. I was in a supermarket, and I didn't have a mask. I didn't have one of those surgical masks, but I had a bandana that I had around my neck, and it had slipped as I was making my way around the store. I was in the store for a couple of minutes at that point, and it had slipped off my mouth. And this lady, I don't know if she worked there or if she was a customer, but she came up to me. She said, "You're put your mask on, sir. You've got to put your mask on. Put your mask." She was hysterical. I looked at her, and you know, the thought briefly crossed my mind that I could make a couple of suggestions as to what this nice lady can do with herself, but I decided not to. I just quietly lifted my bandana over my mouth and turned around and went about my business. We've got to march on. Refuse to take part in that contact tracing nonsense. It's voluntary, isn't it? Well, then, okay. I voluntarily choose not to take part in it. The only person who gets to see my medical information, your medical information, is your doctor. Keep your social distance and be wise, but go on with your life. This is incrementalism at its best, folks. This is what the globalists do. And this is how we have to begin to fight back with our own small lines in the sand. Well, that's our show for today. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have any comments on any of the issues we discussed, drop me a line. You can reach me at comments@itnshow.com. That's comments@itnshow.com. Thanks again for listening, everyone. Until next time, take care of yourselves.
If it's on your mind, it's in the news. Subscribe to In the News on both iTunes and on Stitcher Radio. This has been In the News.